What's up, everyone? How are you all doing today? Today we're going to be doing drawing and painting on trees. We're going to use gouache and Procreate. And if you want to learn how to turn your artistic weakness into your strength, then ArtProf has everything you need with lots of free tutorials, critiques, art dares, and all that cool stuff. One thing real quick, I just want to tell you guys, I almost did this before starting the stream. Clarissa, I should probably bring it up first. I'm just going to saturate the photo reference of the tree just to create some better colors for myself when I actually get into it. So I don't know how well it's showing up on the screen, but thought I'd show you all that. You just magic wand saturation. But what are you going to be doing, Alex?
Ooh, right off the bat. So I went ahead and did the sketch first. Because my sketching, I just noodle away. And it's also, I use a very light pencil so that it doesn't distract from the gouache. So that's why I'm just hitting the ground running, starting right off with this underpainting.
Okay.
And I'm doing it in a nice pink because primary colors I want to use are cool, specifically like greens for the trees. So I think the pink is going to make a nice contrast with that.
And what about the multiple references you have? You explained it to me, but can you tell someone else what that's about?
Absolutely. So I'm using kind of a hodgepodge of the references that are in our Flickr account. And I'm kind of making just an imaginary landscape scene, like a statue in the center. So in the background, I'm using some of the different references. In the middle ground, I'm using additional references. And then in the foreground, some other stump references. And then I'm throwing in like a fantasy kind of statue setup in the middle, because as I'm working on this, I want to kind of talk about the contrast of how do you depict wood in a forest versus stone.
That's so awesome. I'm excited to see what the outcome of that's going to be.
Me too.
The last stream we did together, we were just doing some rocks, and by the end of it, you created like this mini masterpiece. I was like, what in the world? That's
Thank you.
awesome.
That's rocked. It was pretty cool.
For sure.
Which, yeah, we see already some of you guys are hopping on the beer wagon of the pun wagon. Hit them up if you have any for trees, roots, things like that. Let's go with the darks here now.
All right.
Oops.
Right now I'm just trying to figure out just the basic sketch where I want the tree stump to be placed. So if it's wide enough, if it's tall enough. Just trying to make it interesting for myself, and then I'll be able to start getting into color because Alex is, I think, slightly ahead of me in that regard.
Whereas I got delayed, I forgot my favorite weapon, paper towel. Oh, did we get a pun already?
Yes, Sleipnir says, yes, Alex, you can't stump us. Oh man. We're back on the pun game. What was the one that we did on our last year? It was all about rocks. That's what it
Yeah, the
was.
rocks one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's that was the magic word for the evening.
I'm glad we kind of already we have a theme of what to find for our next stream topic, you know, just something that you can make a pun out of.
Yeah, I think it's a fun little challenge. And some of you guys are really good at coming up with puns. It's almost scary how good some of these are. Like they're premeditated or something. Neil's saying, Alex, will you paint cotton candy trees? What's with the pink?
Woo-hoo. So that's a super good question. And cotton candy trees, I'm actually tempted to maybe throw a couple in now. But the pink is mostly as a kind of color contrast, as I will go into. Actually, already you can see with this blue coming in now, the cool blue versus that warm pink is really going to make some yummy combination. Actually, funny question for you, Jordan, and the stream. Every art teacher I've ever had has occasionally used the word yummy to describe the artwork. Like, oh, yeah, you make a really yummy color combination. And, like, food metaphors are really big for describing art, or...
You know, they can be for some people. I don't know if I've ever done that personally. Unless someone is actually painting food, then... Mm-hmm. Then, like, I remember I took a class called Colorworks when I was at RISD, and the assignment was to paint fruit and make it look as delicious as possible. And we went around the room and was like, is this yummy? Is this delectable, delightful, whatever food-related word you want to use. So, yeah. Rebecca is saying, Alex, when I am painting with watercolors but add white to one color, does that mean I'm painting with gouache, or is it about using a set of tubes that are called gouache?
Short answer, it's about using a set of tubes. But you're kind of on the right track of thinking. We're not adding white, but watercolor and gouache are chemically very, very similar. Very similar. The only difference is just on the chemical level, but they respond to water and paint the same way. It's just the opacity. White does not do it. In fact, with watercolor, white more often than not kind of kills the saturation of the color, even though it does make it more opaque. But yeah, even picking up a single tube of gouache and comparing it to your watercolors, I think it's gonna whoa, that's a huge difference right there.
Hmm. C. Cantrell says, or Santrell, not sure how to say the last name, as long as neither of you go out on a limb, you will not be able to stump us.
That was a good twofer. That was
great. Yeah, I was like, oh, shoot, snuck a second one in there. Very good.
We won't leave you guys behind.
At least not intentionally. Bestowing the Brush says trees can have more bark than bite.
Very much true. Very much true.
All right. But before we get more puns, I want to ask the audience real quick, since you guys saw what we were, you know, what we were going to be doing today. You knew it was Alex and I, you knew we were going to be doing trees. Did you guys come up with this stuff beforehand, or are you coming up with this on the spot? Cause I'm very curious. And as we're weighing the answers, Tom G says, Alex, are you picky about what brushes you use, brand or type or bristle?
You know what? Yeah, I think I am very... It's funny, brand, I haven't found too much difference. I do use like a myriad of brands for my like brush set. There is always the price point that I honestly, with brushes, I've noticed the difference. Like, I can't go back to like entry grade or student grade brushes. Like, I have to use like the artist grade, even though they're a little bit more expensive. I think that I use round and flat mostly, of varying sizes from 2 to... You see, it's tough because the brushes I use most often, my hand has rubbed off the number, so I can't read and tell you.
It's such an artist issue.
1 inch. 1 inch, and then this one looks like then like 1.25 inches. Yeah. So ironically enough, I can tell you which brushes I never use because the numbers are still printed on the side. Random appropriate question for you, Jordan. Like, since you can even design your own brushes in Procreate, right? Like, do you ever get kind of swamped by that possibility? How do you decide like what brushes to start with?
I use whatever brush I think will work best. The thing is, I think I admitted this on another stream, I don't actually really make my own brushes in Procreate. I just buy a bunch of them, or because Procreate now has the ability to import brushes from Photoshop. I'll put that
in. Oh, very cool.
So, like, a lot of the brushes that I have are actually Photoshop brushes that have just been moved over. And that's, again, very, very recent. So,
you know. Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't realize they did that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. I actually don't really try that all that much. I don't know why, but just never really something I think about.
You know, you got time for that, you know?
Yeah. You know, what I mean? Mauro's saying, hey, Alex, how do you deal with the slope? Not sure if that's the right word, of the table when painting. Doesn't the paint come out?
Dude, that's such a good question. Yeah, slope is perfect. Yeah, at first I was wondering what you're talking about until you mentioned the desk. Yeah, so, this is the first stream where you guys can see that my desk is at an angle, which I do, like, mostly for comfort. I'm as comfortable right now as if I was just watching TV or playing a video game or something. So the slope is really handy. For me, I've had this desk for years. The only piece of furniture I move with. And actually, I'll go ahead and do a quick demo on the side here just to show how it can. It doesn't really run down. Even if I start to add a lot of water to it, the surface tension of the gouache really keeps it kind of still globbed up. It doesn't quite run down the page. So it's honestly not as big of a problem as I thought it would be.
And on that note, someone's asking, or Matthew Smith is asking, wet or dry palette, or a bit of both?
Ooh, I use a bit of both. So the area I'm working in right now is this area. So this blue is wet, and then I had some green on here that was dry, so I'm kind of incorporating it there. And you can see that gouache is so opaque that I can keep it very light on the palette, but it still comes out pretty opaque in comparison on the actual paper. All right.
Okay. I feel like this beginning stage is always the most integral, because if you get these colors wrong at first, it's very hard to get those back. So forget being quiet sometimes.
No, absolutely.
Neil is saying, Jordan, you should branch out and try some wet charcoal. Mind your business, Neil. No. No. Here's the thing. I've tried wet charcoal before. I've had my experience. I went to art school, undergrad and grad, for 6.5 years. I've done my time. matter of fact, I've done more time than most other people. So how about that?
So when you say you don't like it, you know you don't like it.
I know for a fact.
No, Mom, I've tried Brussels sprouts 50 times. I know I don't like them.
Yep. And again, not saying that you can't have beautiful results with charcoal, because obviously that's not true. There's some amazing pieces that I've seen, even from the art prof staff, that are just like, wow, that's incredible. You won't get me to touch it, at least not with a smile on my face, but you know, whatever. Ayana is asking, Alex, how do you paint so neatly with the brushes? Is there a way that you clean your brushes to get them to lay down so well?
Oh yeah. So some of it is honestly just a lot of practice, which I know that's such a cop-out answer, but it's just a thing of, you do any task, painting or folding your laundry, enough times and you get really good at it. The comparison I'd say is, if either you guys or anyone you know has worked in retail, like at Old Navy folding shirts, you watch those people fold laundry and oh my goodness, they're professionals. So I think it's that's part of it, is just the repetition and knowing how to handle it. But also cleaning your brush after every painting session is such a key thing. You get to really prolong the life of your brush. And more so, I used to think I was superstitious by this, but I don't think I am, that like no brush is identical, even if it's the same size. You get used to the weight or how those bristles move. So yeah, it's some of these brushes I've had for a long time, and I'm just very used to them in my hand. Mm.
I think what you said though about just getting used to the repetition, that's so key, because what I think a lot of new artists or beginning artists don't always understand is that principle of just, it takes time. It really mm-hmm. means everything. Like I actually just watched something about Kobe Bryant mm-hmm. earlier today, maybe like 2 or 3 hours ago. He was talking about the mentality that he had as he was preparing to play in the NBA and even throughout his career. And he would analyze everything that the greats did, and he would spend all this time in the gym or whatever working on that one thing. Like he would shoot like 3,000 three-pointers before he would get breakfast type of thing. Like it's insane. Like this guy had an insane work ethic, and that's why he was one of the greatest.
True.
Not saying you guys shouldn't eat breakfast, but you know. Colleen says, I don't know why it makes me feel better that even Alex has a messy palate.
Yeah, y'all, if you go on Instagram and you see an artist with a clean palate, you're like, you guys had to do some serious preparation for that Instagram shoot.
Right.
I don't know anyone personally who has a clean palate.
You know what? I've never had a palate that I that I had paint on that was ever clean ever again. Like once paint is on it once, it's just always going to be messy somehow, at least for me.
It's funny because gouache in theory is the exception where I could, after this dream, wash this palette with soap and water and make it sparkling clean again because gouache is water soluble, but it's that water solubility. Great phrase, by the way, water solubility, that makes it dirty because I save a lot of money on paint this way. I just keep it on the palette just right. to rehydrate later.
Aninan says, does gouache dry a lighter or darker value? Is it relatively true to what you put down?
That is... it is not true to what you put down. Gouache always changes as it dries, which is a lot of what makes people shy away from gouache. For me, I think I just like that excitement of it. Like as I'm painting this green, I know it's gonna change. I can't tell you what's gonna happen to it, but I know it's gonna change. And so that kind of freedom is actually pretty exciting.
What do you think initially made you gravitate towards gouache? And I don't know if maybe you answer this in another stream, forgive me, but I'm actually
No, it's like it's a big question. I think it was because I really liked watercolor, and I heard that gouache was both similar and also a lot harder. So I was honestly like excited for that kind of growth with it. And I think a more in-depth answer is, yeah, like I knew that gouache was the old medium of a lot of the illustrators that I loved. So I was very curious to kind of experiment with it. But what started as just experimentation was like, oh, this is fun. Mm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about those shadows you're making on your tree stump. How are you choosing, like you said you added saturation to the photo. How much of the photo's colors are you using to inspire the shadows you're making on that?
I'm actually just trying to push everything. I'm trying to get away from all the gray that I'm seeing and just see if I can like how to make it a little bit more extreme. And I'm at a stage now where I'm still just fussing around and trying to figure it out. It may or may not work, but I don't think that this is one of those that I want to do like a one-for-one copy of how it looks. I'm trying to do something more stylized. So, yeah, just having fun.
I like how we're both doing like stylized ones because it kind of, I don't know, not to be too like cheesy teacher moment, but it's like, yeah, like even if you're doing a stylized image, photo references are still incredibly useful.
Right. Definitely. And I feel like because, you know, painting is Red Hat the comment, and start switching my words. Painting is still one of those weird things for me. And I feel like I'm still trying to get a grasp on it. So my process ends up changing a lot, like as I go. And so yeah, some of it is just me trying new things and seeing how well that works. Emma's asking, did you ever try wearing gloves, Jordan? If you're talking about with charcoal and stuff, yes, I actually did wear gloves. there was a store that sold plastic gloves for like 25 cents, and I would buy a bunch of them because I just didn't want to deal with it getting all over my fingers. It just felt weird to me. And so I would always wear gloves, especially in oil painting class. You know, because part of it also is at the end of the day, there's always a line to the sink, everyone trying to clean off their materials and then washing
their hands. Oh, that took me back. Wow, I haven't thought of that in forever.
Right. And for people who've actually been through it, they know the challenge of waiting for 20 minutes and then you're all hungry, and you're tired, and, you know, uncomfortable, you have to use the bathroom, like whatever the case is. You're just trying to get out of there. So, yeah.
And if you're the last in line for the first thing, you're the last in line for all the rest. Because if you're the last one to clean your brushes, you're the last one to get in lunch line, you're the last one to get into coffee shop.
Precisely.
Last one to get into the bathroom.
Yeah. Oh,
boy.
Did I just give you some nightmares, man? PTSD just kicked in.
I was going to say, if anybody wants to know what art school is like, just go to a TSA line for a bit.
There we go. Yeah. Amy's saying, Alex, why are you putting layers down that are more transparent when working with gouache? I understand the under pink, but these blue washes and now the golden one.
Yeah. So with the golden one, so the gold and the extra layer of pink are going to be for the sky. And since I want that to be the brightest point, that's all I'm going to paint on them, I think, because I want the light of the paper to really shine through. But the reason I still do thinner layers of gouache is because, kind of like what Jordan was saying, I'm still at the point of feeling around if these are the right colors I want to use. So if I did a really thick layer now at the early stages, if I wanted to change that, that would be a lot more work. Whereas now with a thin layer, if I wanted to say, make this clump of trees bright orange, I could do that without too much of a hassle. I just paint a thicker orange on top. So if I did that much thicker, it would be harder to make that correction.
That's already feeling a little bit better. I think I was getting too saturated too early with this, and I was like, something doesn't feel right. I had to cut out that orange, at least for now. I might bring a little bit of it back. I feel like whenever I do art, it's always about self-critique at like every second. It's like nonstop. Do you ever feel like that?
Oh, yeah. Actually, like very much related to what you just said of like something doesn't feel right, where like a lot of the time I feel like, God, something's not right. I really wish I knew what it was.
Mauro's saying, how can y'all deal with having a dirty palette? When my palette is dirty, any paint I try to mix on top of the old mixes, and I end up not getting the color that I want.
That's actually a fair question, because I do have to specify, I can't be like a total trash panda with my palette. Like, actually, this is a, I'll show you another palette of mine as an example. So this is a 4-cup palette, and you can see that they're relatively one color in each cup. So I have a couple of these that I use if I know I want to mix a specific color and keep a large store of that. Actually, the biggest one is like my generic, like mixed dark color. It's like a lot of dark blues and some dark reds for like a neutral dark. But yeah, so those palettes I keep relatively clean and unobstructed.
Tom G says, when painting trees, do you ever consider how the branches have grown? For instance, painting them in short strokes versus a continuous stroke, so each paint stroke represents a season or year.
Oh, that's really cool to think about. You know what? I haven't thought of it in that way, but I'm curious to paint this and see how I do. Because for this one, I'm doing trees in the background, middle ground, and foreground. So I'm actually really curious to see how my brush strokes change with the trees as they go.
Yeah, I feel like the way I would approach it is it depends on the distance and the type of tree. And a lot of that is also kind of figured out in the sketch phase too. You know, because I feel like for me at least, I have to try and separate things into categories. Like this is the sketch. This is the underpainting. This is the shadow. This is the, you know, it helps me to think more systematically like that rather than just kind of going all in.
good tree pun.
Yeah. So it just depends. It just depends. Ayana saying, at Art Prof, what medium is your most confident? Speaking of, what is everyone's most confident medium to work in?
Ooh. I'm going to throw that question right back to all of you guys in the audience, too, of like, think about which one's your most confident. For me, without a, you know, it's one, I'm going to say two answers. One, gouache, and the other one, honestly, like Sculpey Clay.
Sculpey. I was not expecting you to say Sculpey. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I make little tiny Sculpey pots for succulents. I just mail them to friends and keep them for my own kitchen and stuff. But it's that kind of funny thing where it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm very much like beginner confidence of like, this is great. I'm the best, you know? Whereas gouache, I know what I'm doing enough to know that I have to be very careful, you know?
Okay.
How about you? What are your most confident mediums?
Just trusty pencil.
That's yeah.
You know, trusty, you know, regular drafting pencil, digital, obviously. But that's almost a whole different category in of itself. But I've always wanted to work in the industry that I'm in now, the animation field. And when you're doing a lot of stuff, unless you're doing like backgrounds or like the visual development side of like, you know, doing all the paintings and stuff, pencil is fine for a lot of it. See, Christine Zito is asking, Alex, since you are doing trees in the background, how do you make trees that far back whose local color is a warm tone like red or orange? I always cool tone, but it never looks right.
I think that when, so say this was like a fall image and like there were warmer colors in the background. I think how I would do it is being aware of muting the colors that go into the background. Like actually, that's in a way what I'm doing here, where these are not like vibrant greens or vibrant blues. They're not only darker, but they're also muted, where there's a little bit of warm colors mixed in with it, so they're not quite punchy. And then save the punch at the foreground, not just for detail and high light and contrast, but also for more vibrant colors. And that rule works regardless of the color palette you're working with. I hope that made sense.
Mm-hmm. did it? Did it make sense to guys?
That's those little things where I just talked and then I like looked down. I'm like, I don't know what I said.
Hopefully something stuck, right? I do that all the time. There was one time, actually, I think it was my last stream or second to last or something, where I was commenting on something Deep Dude was doing, and I realized midway through that I made zero sense. I didn't have a full thought yet, and I was like, you know, forget it. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore.
When you're using the brushes, do you ever find that composition is a little bit oversaturated?
Exactly. Top G says, Alex, I'm working on an illustration in gouache for a client. How do you share drafts or progress?
I can't help but be like a little bit funny in my response of step one, don't have a client. No, I'll be sure to take good quality photos on my phone or camera. And then I won't, you know, you want to edit them to the point where they're accurate, but you don't want to spend hours editing a photo that you and the client both know is just a draft image. So make sure that it's a photo that accurately represents the image you're doing. But yeah, honestly, I've never had a case where a simple phone photograph isn't good enough. And since, actually on that note, I just like that, from the category of like people always appreciate honesty, I live in a very dark apartment with not a lot of windows. And so honestly, sometimes if I finish an update that they want to see, I'll text them and say the image and say, hey, here's a picture I took. Just a heads up, the lighting's not as good as I'd like it to be. This part is a little bit more brighter. How does it look for now? And that, yeah. Just again, being honest with your limitations is, I've never found it to be not helpful. Mm-hmm.
It's that saying, honesty is the best policy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So yeah, no, there's I'm in a period with no clients right now, and as much as like the income of extra work is great, as far as like having the time to just work on my personal work and just kind of not worry about it, it's a little you know, coffee tastes a little better in the morning, you know.
Is that so interesting? Yeah, I think we've all had those experiences with not so amazing clients. For me, the part that is always frustrating is when it just doesn't seem like it'll ever be right. You know, then they want to ask for a trillion iterations. It's like, first of all, you don't own me. Second of all, you're not paying me enough to make all these changes, you know? And those are the issues I find.
Third of all, you and I both know you're going to try to not pay me, period.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
I've had a really good luck with a lot of good clients I've really enjoyed working with. I think apart from the humor, there is also that, like, I just personally right now am feeling very creatively uninspired. Mm-hmm. So it's so wonderful to be able to just play with personal work. Because if someone, like, even if my best friend in the world was like, hey, can you do me a logo? I need it by tomorrow. I'd be like, hey, dude, I got nothing. Like, I'm pretty tapped. Like, I'll try, but I can't. I'm pretty tapped.
Interesting. So is there, do you think there's a cause to the creative struggle right now? Or is it just one of those things where...
Honestly, I mean, I know we're trying to make an evergreen streaming service, but I think a lot of it is still with pandemic. Like, I think I was talking with like some other artist friends in the community I'm in, and they were all like, yeah, dude, it's ideally we'd have a lot of time now to like work on amazing pieces, but it's like we're just also emotionally exhausted from it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's a big time to just learn how to be gentle with yourself.
Yeah. I ask because I'm dealing with the same thing right now where I'm just like, you know, I'm kind of on E right now creatively. Like, I'm really trying and I think I'm doing okay considering, But part of the joy of being an artist is being able to explore the world and just get inspired by being around other people, around other artists. And this situation, it becomes very, very challenging.
Oh, yeah. And so, yeah, I'm very, very curious about... I'm not saying this is, like, cruel. Like, I know there are some artists that I'm looking at their work, and it's like, yeah, they're being incredibly productive right now. But, yeah, I think it's just kind of, like, listen to your body, listen to what your mind is telling you. And, yeah, be gentle with yourself.
Right. We have a comment from Ray Mustard. It says, it is so great to see you two working together. I feel energized after hearing y'all exchanging pro notes. Oh, that's so sweet.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, kind of what you were just saying, Jordan, of how, like, we feed off of the world, that this is extremely energizing to, like, make art with somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, there was a time about 100 years ago in New York called the Harlem Renaissance, and one of the things that all the, particularly Black artists would do is, you know, you get the poets and the musicians and the writers and the artists, they would all come together and they would bounce ideas off each other. And it's happened several other times as well, like in Paris, I think. And, you know, those times are always the best for artists. So I feel like building community is so important. That's kind of what we emphasize here at Art Prop. So, yeah, the struggle is real. Jesslyn Alvina saying, hello, can you explain about underpainting? Sorry.
Oh, don't apologize. No, not at all. Or, I mean, yes, absolutely.
Mix it up there, buddy.
Can you explain underpainting? No. actually, yeah. So a lot of my underpainting was pink. And as I added these colors in the middle ground of the blues, they're popping out more because of that pink in the background. But Jordan, how about you and your underpainting? Because it's a little like you're using a lot of the similar like earthy tones for it. But like, how does the underpainting still coming into play for yours?
If I remove everything, it starts off with this. Mark was not supposed to be there, but I just started off with this kind of greenish red kind of haze, and part of it was just inspired by the overall color palette. That's kind of what I saw, and that's what I meant by I'm trying to get rid of some of these grays and just push whatever it is I'm seeing. And there are still a significant amount of grayish colors in it, but for me, what was important was just trying to see the value in everything. Neil's asking, oh, were you gonna say something?
I was just gonna make a dumb joke. Everything has value.
Oh, dumb. It's true. It's true, man. Neil says, Jordan, any tips for printing digital paintings? The college that I'm applying to requires prints of digital paintings.
Oof.
Oh, really? Why? Okay. You know, I'm not even going to do it. But that's a very odd request. So first thing that you want to recognize is there's two different modes when it comes to digital art. There's RGB, which stands for red, green, blue, and that's what a screen will, that's how a screen showcases colors. It's always a mixture of that. When you're printing, you need to transfer that to CMYK, which stands for cyan, magenta, yellow, and then K stands for black for some odd reason. But so that's usually the first thing. And what I recommend is doing some small tests. Maybe getting the same quality paper, but doing like a small version of it and, you know, comparing and contrasting. And so what I would do in school and what a lot of us would do, and we hated it, was we would always have to be prepared to print like 10 or 11 versions of the same thing and adjust it, you know, go back to the computer, print it again, see how it worked, and, you know, just keep trying it. Yeah, it's not fun. It's not fun, but remember to recognize the transfer to CMYK, and then it's not going to look the exact same way it did on screen. That's what the adjusting is for.
Yeah, I echo Jordan's sentiment of like, oh, why would they do that? Unless it's like a message of like they're a school and they're trying to teach you that life is pain. I don't know, but because yeah, it is an arduous process.
Yeah, like it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I would understand more if they were like, hey, we want you to do an oil painting and we need you to send that to us. But if it's a digital painting specifically, I don't see why it's not just send us a link to where you posted it. Like, I feel like that'd be much easier, but
yeah,
it is what it is. Ira is saying, what do you do when you have this reference, but you want it in a different color? Like you want a tree in pink. How do you use the color with it? So I'm just going to say this since I have Procreate, one thing you can always do, and I kind of did it earlier, is you could shift the hue of the painting. So, where's the comment so we can close it? Cause you guys can't see it on my screen. Behind the scenes. Thank you. So if you go here to the adjustments and hit hue saturation and go to layer, you can move this slider and it automatically changes everything. So you could see it's going from like a bluish purple, and we're getting some weird reds in here and some greens. So that's one way to do it. And if you push the saturation, then it'll really start looking odd. Like this looks like something you would find in Alice in Wonderland. You know what I mean?
Wow, that's funky.
Like it's just kind of cool. So that's one way to do it. Very simple. Another way is you could do an overlay, sort of like how Alex is, you know, kind of glazing over the painting. You could do the exact same thing here, or let's say I want to fill it with a magenta color. And I could just put a different color mode on and just lower the opacity a bit. And you could do a bunch of stuff like this. So yeah, you'll just have to find what fits best for you, but that's what I would recommend.
Mm-hmm. Same thing. What works for me too is just using the phone. And I'll just sometimes transfer the image into grayscale, just black and white, because then it's looking at nothing but the value. So I'm like, cool, this could be any color.
Mahika says, for Jordan and Alex, how long do you take breaks? And what do you do on breaks? I don't think you guys want to know the answer to my question or that question.
Just power sleep.
I'll say this. I don't take breaks as often as I should. I'm not the best example when it comes to that. When I do go on breaks, I'll try to take a walk. Oftentimes, there have been times I've literally forgotten to eat. So I'll be sitting for 6 hours. I'm like, dang, I'm kind of hungry now. I should go feed myself before I die. You know, so there's that.
It's weird. We're getting a comment in from username Jordan's mom, and she's
we've had that talk before. She's like, you guys can't keep doing that, you know.
I'm the same way. If I'm in the groove, I'm like, oh, I forgot lunch today. Bummer.
Just happens.
That's the point where I gotta chip in that having a dog is great for that, because like, for days when I have nothing to do but paint, she's really good. Amelia is really good at being like, it's time for a break. I got to go to the bathroom. And so it's really, because it is healthy, even if you're feeling that zone, it is healthy to step away.
Yeah.
Even for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, another thing I do, I stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I'll do like back stretches in particular. Like I'll, you know, just kind of, I don't have a bouncy ball, but I can lean across the surface and just go like, ah, you know, that's always kind of nice. Neftali is asking for Alex, do you prefer to use more than one medium like gouache and acrylic, or would you stick with gouache?
I like using the same medium, but I am really curious about, and I'll do these on some of the live streams, just a preview. I'm curious about mixed media, because whenever I talk about the benefits of one media for another, I'm always comparing two media. So for me in my head, I'm like, kind of feels like I should utilize both of those for different reasons. So right now I'm using just one media at a time. But yeah, I'm very excited to change that.
Rachel's saying, Jordan, are there any traditional materials you enjoy a lot? Okay, outside of what I said before, I wouldn't say I'm very proficient at using pastels, but the color that you could get from that was actually really cool. I did one project where I used it a lot, and learning how to mix colors that way was actually kind of cool. And the only sad part is all those drawings are practically destroyed now because they just smudged so much over the years, which is part of the reason, you know, any dusty thing kind of frustrates me. But I did enjoy using it at the time, probably because I like colors.
Yeah, that's a really funny thing of looking at like the lifetime of paintings. Mm-hmm. Like watercolor gouache, they say like give or take maybe like 70 or 80 years before it shows sign of wear. People estimate that acrylic is going to last historically longer than even oil paint because it's plastic. Like with a finished acrylic painting, you could in theory spray it with Windex and clean it off, you know? Like,
wow.
It's just not. That's the theory. We got to test. We got a few hundred years until we can do side by sides of oil painting and acrylic. But
I guess we'll know the answer then.
Yeah, we'll find out. Yeah. Actually, yeah, we won't. We don't have to worry about it. Whatever.
It's like the Tootsie Roll Pop commercial. Like, how many licks does it take to get to the center? Yeah. The world may never know.
Mr.
Allen. Yeah. Yeah. Trent says, I like working with people, but sometimes it makes me feel slow. Like in figure drawing class, other people are so much quicker, but I am better on other things. Demon base.
First.
You know, that's part of the deal of being an artist. Like they're just gonna inherently be some things that you aren't as good at. And it can get very frustrating. The goal is to not quit. So I'll tell you guys a personal story, actually. Not that it happened to me, but I was, I was in the environment. I was leading a figure drawing workshop one time, and this guy came in, and he had never been there before. And at the beginning of the workshop, I explained how it worked. And I said, okay, so the model's going to pose for such and such time. And, just pick a seat and enjoy, have some fun and talk to people and blah, blah, blah. I come to him at the end of 3 hours. I'm like, so let me see your work. And he's like, I didn't draw anything. I was like, what do you mean you didn't draw anything? We had 3 hours. He's like, well, yeah, the model was moving too fast. And I was like, bro, you just wasted 3 hours of your time. And instead of even making an attempt to get better, all he could do was focus on, I'm not as fast as everyone else. I can't do this. I don't know whatever happened to him because that was the last time I saw him, but just, that type of mentality of like comparing yourself to other people can be very destructive.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like Colin Firth said it in the movie Kingsman when he's like, nobility isn't being better than your fellow man, it's being better than your former self.
Mm-hmm. Right. I like that. I really like that.
Yeah, because I mean, boom, like, actually, yeah, I can open up my Instagram right now and find people that are doing so much better, like, professionally than I am. But it's like, yeah, you could scroll all day and that wouldn't make you any better of a painter, you know?
Right. And you know, the other thing is artists already have a very common habit of comparing themselves to other people. And, like, that's already a struggle. So if you can overcome that, your life is going to be so much better as an artist because you're not worrying about the same pressures. It's already tough enough as it is to learn color and value and shape and proportion and, you know, composition, all those different things. to have to be like, oh, but Paul is so much better. I can never be as good as Paul, you know?
Paul's pretty great, though.
Right. It doesn't take away from you as an artist to admit that someone else is better than you. Like, it is what it is, you know?
It's, I kind of have to think of, like, in my work in the coffee industry, like, there's a lot of, a good friend of mine said the other day, like, it's a field where you cannot afford to be pretentious. And I think we can all think of the time we've been to a coffee shop and a barista has been pretentious. It's like thinking they know it all. And it's like, if you walk into a room thinking you're the smartest person in the room, that's your first mistake. Mm-hmm. So if you kind of walk in and be like, no matter how good of a painter you are, being like, yeah, I wonder what new I can learn about painting from these people. You're just going to have a much better, you're going to have a good time, you know?
Right. You got to be smart enough to know you don't know everything. That's where real wisdom comes from. Our prof says, I mean, Colin Firth is no Hugh Jackman, but he is just so charming sometimes. I know who that first dude is. Who's Colin Firth? You know who that is, Alex? I'm sorry.
Yeah, Colin Firth. He was famous for his role in Mr. Darcy in the Pride and Prejudice film that lasts roughly 50 years. He's also in Kingsman. He's in Bridget Jones's Diary, which is essentially just Pride and Prejudice remade for the modern era. He was King George in The King's Speech.
Yeah, I am not familiar with any of those things. That explains why I don't know. Thank you for the explanation, though.
Any of those, I'd recommend either Kingsman or Bridget Jones's Diary. I think those would be my two favorites.
Okay. Eminem, not Marshall Mathers, says, I remember crying the first time I walked into a caricature course. I was about 11 years old, and everyone in the room was older and seemed to have way more anatomy experience than I did. Have you ever experienced something like that, Alex?
Honestly, quite the opposite, and I think it has been detrimental to my learning, where I've been the quote-unquote art kid until I went to college. Mm-hmm. So I think college was the first time that I ever felt challenged, and so I think I was way behind in my growth. But if I had an experience like that, as hard as it sounds, and thank you for sharing it with us, I think that's so important for your learning to have those humbling experiences.
The thing is, I don't know, I guess there's what, 7 to 7.5 billion people in the world, give or take a couple million or something. There's bound to be someone that's better than you at what it is that you do. And I don't think it's fair to let yourself be overwhelmed by that thought, you know? Like, I don't know how to compete with 7 billion people, but I can compete with myself from yesterday, like we mentioned earlier. So I wouldn't focus on the outside, you know, environment around you so much to show how good you are. Just, you know, if you're in a situation like that, learn from them, become their friend, you know, see what they have to offer, because a lot of artists are actually a lot nicer than we would imagine, and they're willing to share just about everything they have most of the time.
Mm-hmm. And I think if artists are not as nice as you hope, I think it's because they're fighting that same battle of feeling like they have to be the best. Yeah.
Right. And obviously the outliers are, you know, there are some artists who are just jerks. And
oh, that's true.
Avoid those people. But for the most part, it's really not all that complex.
Yeah, and if you meet an artist who's a jerk, just don't let him get you down and walk away.
And some people thrive off of the idea that someone is doubting them, and they take that as fuel. Oh, you think I can't do this? All right, I'm going to show you.
I was listening to a podcast the other day that, funny enough, made the same point. The host was joking, like, oh, I wouldn't have accomplished half the things in my life if I wasn't driven by pure spite.
Love the honesty in that.
Yeah.
Jason Jordan, says, I couldn't figure what reference images to use. I need more practice with Procreate brushes. I am just putting down lines and colors and getting an interesting tree image. You know, to be honest with you, that's exactly what I'm doing. Like, literally, you can have a lot of experience, but all art is also just experimentation. You know, like, you can have a master musician like Prince or Stevie Wonder, they could still struggle with making a song. Just doesn't mean that just because they've made so many great albums before that this new challenge doesn't give them some sort of difficulty. That's all it is. Yeah, mm-hmm. Just challenges.
Actually, dude, I really liked the way he phrased that of, I'm just making marks, painting colors, and making a good-looking tree. And it's like, ain't we all, you know? That's
right.
That's the trick.
And the other thing about that, too, is if the image doesn't come out the way you want, then the next step, do it again and do it better this time. And if that one doesn't turn out the way you want, do it again and do better the next time. And just keep that cycle going. Nolan Sarah says, for Alex and Jordan, what is your take on ultra realism you find on Instagram? For me, it kind of sucks the creativity and personality out of an artwork. Ooh, you want to take that one, Alex? First.
Yeah, I think short answer, I'm inclined to agree with you. But at the same time, I ain't slouching on how much time it takes to learn that. But I would agree that, yeah, like, as far as it's kind of a bummer because I know how much time and effort goes into it. But it's also like at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, you're not showing me anything new. It's just the same old, same old. Kind of like, it's a silly joke, but it's like, yeah, why bother with photorealism? Like, that's why we have photos, you know? Like, no, it is an incredible skill, and it's not without its merits. But yeah, if I'm looking at pieces of art that provoke me thinking, it's not going to be like a photorealistic image of like a stereotypically attractive person like in water, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that. But for me, I agree. I think a lot of the creativity is sucked out. But I will admit, you know, there's something about the work ethic and the dedication that it takes to do something like that. That is not an easy thing to accomplish. And so anyone who does that work, I appreciate their skill and their motivation, dedication, and all of that good stuff. But it is, again, like, what are you bringing new to the table? What can you offer me that wasn't in the photograph? You know? Mm-hmm. Not to say that doing like realism challenges aren't helpful, because you can actually still learn a lot from doing that. But
yeah, I want to like almost walk back a little too, because yeah, like, it is an incredibly, like, I can say with no hesitation, I cannot do that. Mm-hmm. Because that's an amount of time and skill and attention to detail that I have not mastered. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. 10 days, 4 cows. Set. That's a really great name. Drawing Colin Firth for a live stream. Subtle expressions from Pride and Prejudice. Drawing him holding his Oscar for a medal reference. Interesting. Morrow says, Pride and Prejudice stream, Pride and Prejudice stream.
Yes.
I might have to miss that one because I don't know anything about Pride and Prejudice.
I would be so down for a Pride and Prejudice stream. Oh, yes. I'd be so down for that.
I feel like if we're going to do a Pride and Prejudice stream, you got to get the ones who are, like, the most into it.
The fanboys, yeah.
Yeah, like, it just doesn't seem right otherwise, so I may or may
not. All about that Keira Knightley version, that just, oh, I cry every time. It's my favorite, like, Sick Day movie.
So that's cool. You know, I think I overestimated myself again. And I was thinking at the beginning of the stream, I didn't say it out loud. I was like, I wonder if I'll be able to get to a second one. And now I'm looking at this, I'm like, that's not happening.
Nope.
You and your silly dreams, Jordan.
That's the, I guess, one of the benefits of the gouache is that because this is on like a pad of watercolor paper, it's like, oh, Alex, do you want to do one or two? And I'm like, I better only do one because there's no way I'm taking 20 minutes out of this stream to pull off this piece of paper.
Right.
It's like, if I finish, I'll just keep noodling on.
And that's one of the curses of digital, because you look at it and it's not done, and you can always say, well, you can finish it. You know, you don't have to worry about it drying or anything like that. The worst you have to consider is maybe a file getting corrupted or something.
Oof.
I've never seen that happen with Procreate, by the way, but, you know, just saying.
When you said, like, worrying about it drying, to bring back to our conversation about breaks earlier, that was another thing of, like, that's what initially got me to start taking breaks. Like, well, I stretched the paper. It's got to take an hour for it to dry. Guess I'm going to hang out. It's, yeah. But if I was working with a medium that didn't need to dry, I'd be like, why don't you just keep working? Skip lunch again.
And, you know, actually, now that I think about it, a lot of the no breaks thing probably comes from being in art school. Again, not saying you shouldn't attend art school or that it doesn't have valuable stuff, because obviously it does. But I have noticed in a lot of scenarios that there's an unhealthy culture of just seeing who can stay up the longest or who can get the least amount of sleep. And if you get more sleep, it means you're not as good or you're not as hardworking or something. That stigma is very, very toxic, and I really don't like it, but it's there. And it is what it is.
You are absolutely right about that. It's a lot of, I don't know if anybody's seen that movie Whiplash with that one guy and the kid who plays the drums.
One guy and the kid who plays the drums. I have not seen that movie.
It's a good movie, but it's a very only slightly dramatized version of, I think, what it can be like in a creative school. Of, like, you let the pressure just completely overcome you. I think it's just something mental health-wise, I think, is worth taking into stock before starting an art school. Just that recognizing, all right, let's still be healthy, still take breaks, you know? Yeah. Don't let it literally get the best of you.
The other thing, too, about that is when you go to art school, the plan, the hope, is that you have a career afterwards. And you don't want to risk hurting yourself in some way by you being intemperate with your habits of sleep and stretching and exercise and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We have a comment from Amy Phillips. Hot or cold press paper, Alex?
Oh, hot press is what I've been rocking for about 2 years now. But I used to really enjoy the texture of cold press. So I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. I do like paper, whichever hot or cold, I like it to have a little bit more thickness to it, just so then you can really work into it. But yeah, I'm much more accustomed to hot press right now. I think I just like the smoothness, I like that consistency of it.
Jesslyn says, hello again. Have any tips for watercolor painting?
Ooh, yeah. let's see. Still do an underpainting in watercolor. I think when I look at new watercolor paintings, that's the number one thing that people don't, but they have a hard time really coming to grips with, because the paint is so transparent. They leave the white of the page and then they only put on the color that they're using. Still do an underpainting. Watercolor is transparent, but it's not that transparent. So start with a very light layer, but do that underpainting. Do that value study. It's really going to make a difference. And if at the first time you do a value study, you paint it too dark, that's okay. That's that kind of learning about how the medium works. But yeah, I think that's my biggest tip of advice for watercolor.
You know, someone asked actually what other mediums I like. Watercolor pissed me off so much, but when I started getting the hang of it, I really did enjoy the results. It's, you know, it's one of those things that if you can do watercolor really well, it is just phenomenal. Like one thing that I'm always really impressed by, for those of you who are Disney fans, the movie Lilo and Stitch,
like
all the backgrounds, as far as I know, were done in watercolor. And it's you just take a look, you just Google it afterward, after the stream, of course. And but yeah, it's so amazing. So I love that sort of stuff.
That's man. And Lilo and Stitch is one of my favorite Disney movies, dude.
It's the best, dude. My cousin loves it so much. He has two pit bulls, they're named Lilo and Stitch.
Aww, that's so cute.
Matter of fact, I went over to visit, and Lilo would not stop licking me. Like, she at first she was scared of me and she would bark. Then I gave her a rice cake on, with peanut butter on it, and she became my best friend after that. She was just in the room and just licked my hand for like 10 minutes straight.
Well, yeah, she knows what's up now. She's like, oh, this is my buddy Jordan, you gonna give me the rice cake.
It was so awesome. C. Cantrell says, I believe that it's less productive to not take breaks. That's I had to think about that one. Yeah, but that's so true, because burnout is a real thing. Like,
yeah,
it's ferocious when it attacks, when it's the worst time, like finals.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, dude, it any field, because like, yeah, for a lot of you guys know, like, I'm working to go back to school for a master's in therapy and counseling. And in initial classes, they're talking about therapist burnout. And I'm like, wait, you guys have that too? Like, like every industry, if you're passionate about it, has that thing where your passion can become, you can let it fuel some bad habits.
Maya Hikas is asking, how do you manage through an underpainting in watercolor?
Very lightly. So, and it sounds like such a cop-out answer, but yeah, like just a very light layer. And I know, and don't panic when it happens, because the white of the page, the way one of my favorite professors put it, is value-wise, the white of the paper is like a nuclear blast. There is nothing brighter than the white of the page. So I know that when you put that first stroke, no matter how light the wash is of watercolor paper or watercolor onto the paper, it's going to look so dark. And you'd be like, oh, why did Alex tell me to do this? But then as you paint on top of it more and more, you'll start to understand that watercolor is all about building those layers. My advice would be to do the first one very small so you don't waste a lot of paper. But because it will not turn out well.
Ira is saying, when I finished painting using watercolor and look light, does it, wait, when I finished painting using watercolor and look light, does it mean I'm using too much water? I always want it to look vibrant though.
Ooh. That's a good question. I think you might want to start experimenting with gouache as well. That's, I would recommend you trying that out, because if you're looking for that vibrancy, the transparent nature of watercolor makes it very hard to get that sometimes. So playing around with watercolor and gouache might be a very successful medium pairing for you. Or you'll try it and be like, no, this is not it. And if that's the case, yeah, like, keep experimenting with it. Perhaps watercolor and acrylic could also be a good way to go. Because if you're looking for that color vibrancy, that's a challenge to get with just watercolor alone.
Amy Phillips says, I love the details you are adding to the trunk, Jordan. And now I've, oh, well, thank you. And the out of focus green and yellow forms in the background. I appreciate that. Yeah, it was, I don't know, at some point I just thought I'd try something different with the texture brushes. And I think that's where things started sinking in for me. Because I have a bad habit of using the same exact brush for everything. And in reality, it's not a good thing. I think, I don't even want to say, it's like an ultra laziness, because it's not like I have to clean a brush. I literally just have to do this and just slide through them. But, you know, I'm learning just like you all. So, yeah. Thank you.
I'm laughing because I have used this brush for this entire painting. It's a size 6 Winsor Newton round, in case anyone is wondering. But yeah, I'm like, meh, I'll switch when I need to.
Well, that's one of the things about digital painting. Like, that's one thing you'll often hear is, like, vary up your brushes, because it's very easy. Because a brush is basically like a stamp that's repeated when it comes to Photoshop. When you're working traditionally, you can do all this fluid stuff. But digitally, it just... it's like, boom, that's the same shape. Boom, that's the same shape. And unless you mix it up, it'll come off looking very artificial.
That's such a good phrasing for it, of like a stamp. Like, that's a really, really cool way to phrase that.
Yeah, like, it's really all it is. And Procreate's even more advanced than Photoshop, because it has a stamp and then a texture behind it. So mm-hmm. you can mix up both of those and get a lot of variation. But when you stick with one brush, that can be a consequence of that. I've seen plenty of artists use like the default round brush and they make amazing stuff, but that does happen from time to time. Rebecca is saying, with watercolor, is there any way to flatten out paper buckling if you didn't tape it down at the beginning?
Oh, I the end of your question was going to be what I recommended. Option one, start over. Option two, and be careful with this one, but it does have success. You get a clothing iron, and you get an ironing board, and then you get a thick, like, white towel. And you put the towel over the... so you put the painting... I want to make sure y'all get this right when you do it, or if you do it. You put something like cardboard on the surface of the ironing board, because you don't want the paint to heat up and get on the ironing board. So you put cardboard, then you put your painting down, and then you got your wiggly watercolor paper, and then you put a white towel over the watercolor paper, and you very slowly and very carefully apply the iron to it. And there's no two way around it. It's either going to flatten out the paper, which it can do, or it's going to cause the paint to melt, or it's going to start a fire. So be very careful. Like, it's all like, it hasn't happened to me yet, but I mean, you're using an iron with a piece of paper, so there it is flammable. I remember in Bill Nye the Science Guy show, they would give you like recommendations of like, hey, if you try this experiment at home, be sure your mom and dad are with you. I gotta say that too. Like, don't, honestly, with what I said, it's much easier to just start over and take it as a learning experience.
Yeah, that just sounded like a Lemony Snicket novel, just yep. like starting a fire. Amy just donated for $2 for super sticker. Thank you so much. Appreciate your donation, and all of you out there who are continuing to support Art Prof.
Yeah, thanks so much, dude. That means the world to us. The world specifically.
Wish I had time to paint all these little twigs and stuff, but I don't think I'll be able to do that today. Unless there's a brush for it. Maybe there's a brush and I just don't know it. I might be talking too fast.
When you say like the little stamps, it's like, oh, there's got to be a little, yeah. That's that cool thing where I can see like making brushes a really fun thing to get into if you're inclined. Like, I can make anything.
It can be a lot of fun. It's just the thing, the trouble that I have is I have too many brushes that I don't know what they all do. Like, the library is a little too big. So that makes it intimidating for me sometimes.
I think that's, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because, yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing that I think I'd get overwhelmed by. I'd want to make a different brush for every occasion and then never end up painting, just making brushes.
Right. Morrow says, I'm new to gouache and I can't seem to get the hang of it. With watercolor, I use negative space a lot to create shape. But with gouache, I feel like everything looks too flat. Any tips?
Actually, it's really funny. I've been using a lot of negative space for this gouache painting too. Like, this tree I'm currently working on, and this tree here is still nothing but the negative space. So in a way, the same rules apply. I think as far as tips go, gouache is a lot more dependent on being intentional with your values. Because while they're both additive mediums, gouache you can also subtract by soaking it again and kind of rubbing some away. But yeah, so you, being very aware of, you can mix a color that's a lighter tone, but if you apply it thicker, it's going to be a darker value. So you have to be really intentional about how you're applying and where.
C. Central says, Alex, will you continue to paint professionally after your grad school?
Yeah, 100%. In fact, I'm really hoping that one of the reasons I'm identifying a different main source of income for my career is that I want to have the luxury to paint only what I want to paint, but still do it professionally. Like, I still want to show my work. I still want to publish my work. I just want to have the luxury of being able to turn down jobs that I don't want to do. So,
that makes a ton of sense. Seriously. Yeah. That's the struggle being artists. Like, there are just times you just don't want to do it.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not saying that, like, my answer is the answer for everybody. Some people, like, I know, like, live off of, they genuinely love the freelance lifestyle and wouldn't trade it for anything. I think for me, it was just that it wasn't my personality. So I just kind of reevaluated what I wanted out of it.
Gardi Singh says, I want to get gouache and I am torn between professional ones or a much cheaper local brand with garish colors. I heard people mention that some cheaper ones smell bad and tend to get moldy. Advice?
Yeah, I think that with my experience with gouache, the cheaper brands are so much worse than the professional brands. It's not even an accurate example of what the medium can do. So if cost is an issue, then I would recommend going with just ones you're new. Just get a couple series one colors. Each one's maybe $5 or $6 a tube. Or even if a budget is a big thing, just get two. Just get a blue and then Naples yellow, like a dark blue and then Naples yellow. Or you could just get black and white and just play around with those. Because yeah, I think that it's really worth spending the extra money on the professional grade gouache. It's like a different medium.
Okay. Kind of debating, like, man, do I want to continue working on this later on? I'm not sure. We'll have to see. But yeah. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for joining us on today's live stream. After the stream, we're going to be in the Discord and the Art Pro or the Art Alongs channel. So please hang out with us there and show us your artwork. Please subscribe to the Art Prof YouTube channel. And we also want to say thank you to all of our top Patreon supporters. You guys are what carries us forward and allows these videos and streams to keep continuing and continue to build the Art Prof family. So thank you so much. And again, thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll see you next time. Peace.